This week, three police officers in Chicago were indicted, accused of lying about a fellow officer's fatal shooting of the black teen Laquan McDonald in 2014. On Tuesday, a white police officer in St. Louis shot and wounded an off-duty black officer who'd come to his aid. The Black Police Union said there is a perception that a black man is automatically feared. And this week, the family of Philando Castile reached a nearly $3 million settlement with the city of St. Anthony, Minnesota, after Officer Geronimo Yanez was acquitted in the shooting death of Castile at a traffic stop. Castile told Officer Yanez he had a gun. A passenger said Castile reached for his wallet. Officer Yanez shot him, saying he feared for his life. We spoke with an emotional John Thompson, a friend of Philando Castile's. We'll link you at herenow.org. He sobbed throughout, said he had no sympathy for a scared police officer. That's the job. Well, today we want to hear from Dustin Reichert, a retired sheriff's deputy from Minneapolis. We called him because he blogged from the Yanez trial. As you'll hear, there's more to his story. Hi, Dustin.
Hi, how you doing?
I'm good. And a tender topic here. Lots of tears, lots of pain, and lots of not understanding the verdict. People can't understand how a driver can give a warning that he has a gun, that he was legally carrying, say he's not pulling it out, and then be shot.
It's not as simple, I think, as everybody's saying. There's a difference between saying and verbalizing what you're going to do and what you physically do as an act. What we have here is the perception of Officer Yanez hearing the verbal part about the gun, but seeing a different action.
Well, and to those who would say that this is an issue of African-Americans being shot by officers. In fact, there have been 15 high-profile cases of black men shot by police or dying in police custody, only two convictions. You would say what?
I'd say that we need to be careful. We have to break them down by an individual. There are a different set of training. There are different state requirements.
Well, that's kind of funny because I thought you were going to say that you have firsthand knowledge. You were in a very different situation because in your case, a man raised a gun and pointed it at you. You shot and killed?
Correct, yes.
What's that moment like?
You know, it is scary. There is a lot of fear in there. I know there's a lot of discussion with the Officer Yanez case about fear and scariness. That doesn't mean we're not going to do our job. But yeah, there was a lot of fear there. Just in the middle of it, as fast as it went, which was about 5 to 8 seconds, and I think the moment the first bullet hit me, everything slowed down, like almost the Matrix.
Well, yeah, you're also adding that you were hit. He shot you.
Yes. You know, I had already hit him with what turned out to be a lethal shot, and he was still able to get two rounds to hit me. And when that first one hit me, I thought, oh, I just got, and before I could say the word shot, the second one hit me. And so much happens. My gun went flying. I'm watching it going flying. I'm trying to visually see it so I can get to it to protect myself. And, you know, my son's running. I have a 4-year-old child at the time. And my son's running through my head. And my nephew and niece grew up without a father because he had passed away. And I just kept resonating with my head as I was trying to crawl to safety.
Yeah. Just a horrible moment. I mean, you got to always be thinking, that's possible. I mean, is that part of it, that the police are so painfully aware that that is possible, that you might always think it's possible, even when it would be impossible to the person standing looking at you? They would never even consider that.
Yeah, that whole time, this isn't going to happen. He's not going to shoot me, but I have to continue tactically. And the entire time until the point that he had that gun pointed straight at me, I thought there's no way he's going to shoot me.
And then he did.
Yes.
And you were both white.
Yes, correct. I often wonder, had that been an African-American man in his doorway pointing, not necessarily how the prosecutor would have taken it, but I wonder how the media would have taken it. I think it's a great example. Less you guys, but I do believe mainstream media makes this stuff worse.
Well, but you know, we're also criticized for not paying enough attention to the number of blacks shot until videos surfaced. Look, you tell us police aren't celebrating the acquittal of Officer Yanez, that the case, even with an acquittal, is having a chilling effect?
Yeah, you know, the conversations that I have are pain, frustration. I think everybody understands and sees why the family of Castile would be hurt. I think the frustration is that they don't see that an officer would want to protect themselves. We're at the point now where it's going to be tough second-guessing, if I pull this car over, Do I have to worry about defending myself? Do I have to worry about being prosecuted? And quite frankly, there's not a police officer yet that believes this should have been charged.
Well, I can hear someone saying, well, maybe police officers should think twice about pulling people over because disproportionately African Americans are pulled over for things like traffic violations, brake lights.
You know, it's a fine line. Police officers aren't the ones that set the laws, but these are the ways that a police officer can help clean up an area that's a problem area. In this particular case, we know that Officer Yanez used it as a pretext stop to determine if he really did think that might be a person that fits the description of the robbery suspect.
There was a robbery in the area. But what you just said confirms what a lot of people in the community think, that these are stops with some other suspicion in mind, that these people are being stopped not because of a brake light, but because it's assumed that they are doing something else. And when you have that mindset, that you're going to be more prepared to shoot.
Do the general public think that sometimes? Absolutely. My wonder is if that same community would also question afterwards if that had been the robbery suspect and later on did another robbery where somebody was killed or hurt and they find out that Officer Yanez hadn't stopped that car. What would they be judging then? It's a very tough decision to make.
Oh, there are tough questions everywhere here. I mean, you say, for instance, that you don't think this should have gone to trial to begin with, but wouldn't that have been even worse if people saw that video and have their own governor, Governor Dayton, go on television and say if Castile, Philando Castile, had been white, he wouldn't have been shot and there had been no trial?
Yeah, what Governor Dayton said was irresponsible. He knew no details. I was just shocked that they charged this case. Let's go after the bad cops. Let's go after the cops that make big errors. I don't see an error here. As insensitive as that sounds, it was a perception of Officer Yanez. And whether or not he was reaching for the gun, we do know he was reaching in the area of the gun. And that's where the Supreme Court allows police officers to reasonably defend themselves. And that's the perception that the defense went on. And that's what the perception Yanez says he had the night of.
What's been going on within the police community that's trying to support Yanez's family? We reported on a group, MinSoul, or Minnesota Supporting Our Law Enforcement. They started a YouCaring page to fundraise for Officer Yanez's family. It was taken down. They talked them into putting it back up. But we also hear that members of this group and others that just support the police are talking about taking stickers and labels off their cars. They're getting threats.
I've spoken to both the groups, Backing the Blue Line and MinSoul.
Yeah, Backing the Blue Line is a nonprofit of police wives.
Correct. Both of them have reported they've needed to remove bumper stickers and any markings. After this incident, one of the individuals from one of the groups actually had the lug nuts loosened on their car. So it's been pretty scary for those families.
Well, there have been death threats.
Yes.
And you've had some.
I get them almost every day.
So what has to change here? You don't think that it's an issue of African Americans? Many in the African American community certainly do. The Justice Department in different investigations certainly does. The statistics seem to bear that out. And the money paid out from Michael Brown in Ferguson, $1.5 million settlement. Walter Scott, $6.5 million. This was the man in South Carolina who was running away after a traffic stop back to the officer's shot. Freddie Gray, Eric Garner, millions, millions. And it's an admission that there's a problem. What do? You say you have a gun. Let's say you raise your hands and put your hands up. But then what if they ask you to get out of the car? You have to put your hand down and take your seatbelt off. I mean, it feels impossible. What do to heal this?
You know, the answer is let me upset both sets of groups. Both sides need to change. In no way am I going to say that police officers are perfect. It's hard to do a job when you go out every day and people look at you and sneer at you and hate you for what you do while you're trying to do good. And in no way would it be pleasurable to be driving around the street and feel like everybody's looking at you different because you're a different color. Both sides need to change how they react, though. You know, I tell this to my own kids who, two of the three are blonde. They're blue-eyed. They're very white kids. And I tell them, if you get pulled over, you turn on the overhead light, you turn off your radio, you roll down your window, and you put your hands on your steering wheel at 10 and 2. Yes, sir, no, sir. It's not about giving the officer respect because you like them. It's about making sure your intentions are clear. And I think that that's a huge problem that we have right now. We're so anti-police that both sides are going to continue to fight and separate. So to bring them together, we can continue to ask police officers to do a little bit better every day. But we're not asking the community. But until we learn to bring that calm down on both sides, I don't think we'll ever get a fix.
Dustin, I just have to say, you know, parents of children of color absolutely are telling their kids to do that.
I think in a different way. I watched a video that somebody sent me yesterday, and this African-American man with a beautiful little daughter, and he was recording what she says, and she's young, and it broke my heart with her hands up. My name is so-and-so. I have no ill intentions. I have no weapons on me. I get what he was doing, but it's not the same way.
I mean, it made you feel what? Like, don't tell this little girl that I'm going to shoot her? That, I mean, how can you not, though, if you're afraid as a parent?
That in there instills the assumption into that child that she's going to be shot because she is African-American. And I don't think that's fair.
Dustin Reichert, a retired deputy sheriff from Minnesota. Dustin, thank you very much.
Thank you.
And Dustin Reichert retired in 2005. In 2003, he shot and killed a man who first shot at him in a violent gun battle. He's been battling post-traumatic stress ever since and speaking about surviving PTSD. For more, and hear our story with a friend of Philando Castile who was killed in a police shooting, go to hereandnow.org.